to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. And you can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our special guests will be Ellen Marimont Silver and Robin Bromhall. Longtime partners, 20 years. And our local celebrities, the producers of We Mean It Productions. Hello, you two.
Hello, you two.
Welcome. So if We Mean It Productions sounds familiar or vaguely familiar to you, it's because we usually hear about this particular production right around Pride, because Robin and Ellen, who are We Mean It Productions, they bring us the always fabulous comedy nights. But we didn't know if you knew the women behind We Mean It Productions.
We certainly didn't. So we want to know more. So stay tuned to learn about Ellen and Robin, their coming out stories, how they met, and what their families thought about it.
Or think about it.
And how they negotiate the world.
Yes.
But first, hold on to your seats. Here's news and events from Outbeat member Joel Bellagio.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. An architect and a retired office administrator have become the first gay couple to marry in Argentina under a new law legalizing same-sex marriage. Miguel Angel Califato, 65, and Jose Luis Navarro, 54, have lived together for 27 years. After the early morning ceremony in the northern town of Frias, the couple promised to hold a big party to thank all who had supported the passage of the law. Another gay couple got married in Buenos Aires an hour later, and many more gay marriages are scheduled for the weekend, including one between two men serving time in prison. Argentina is the first Latin American country to legalize same-sex marriage. The law was passed after a long and often bitter campaign, and it still faces opposition, most notably from the Roman Catholic Church. Meanwhile, in the United States, with a laying on of hands, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America welcomed into its fold seven openly gay pastors who had until recently been barred from the church's ministry. The ceremony at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in San Francisco was the first of several planned since the denomination took a watershed vote at its convention last year to allow non-celibate gay ministers in committed relationships to serve the church. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, with 4.6 million members, is now the largest Protestant church in the United States to permit non-celibate gay ministers to serve in the ranks of the clergy, an issue that has caused wrenching division for it as well as many other denominations. The Episcopal Church and the United Church of Christ also allow gay ministers, and the Presbyterian Church General Assembly voted at its convention earlier this month to do so as well, although the vote will become church law only after it is ratified by a majority of the church's 173 regional presbyteries. And six gay couples in Hawaii are filing a lawsuit asking for the same rights as married couples, 3 weeks after Governor Linda Lingle vetoed a same-sex civil unions measure. The lawsuit does not seek the titles of marriage or civil unions for gay partners. Instead, it requests that the court system extend gay couples the benefits and responsibilities of marriage based on Hawaii's Constitution's prohibition against sex discrimination. The legal action in state court comes as a response to the Republican governor's veto July 6th, when she said voters should decide whether to reserve marriage for couples of a man and a woman. Five other states and the District of Columbia permit same-sex marriages. 5 more states essentially grant the rights of marriage to same-sex couples without authorizing marriage itself. Hawaii passed the nation's first Defense of Marriage constitutional amendment in 1998, giving the state's legislature the power to reserve marriage to opposite-sex couples. The amendment is silent on civil unions and rights for same-sex couples. The case likely won't be settled until it reaches the Hawaii Supreme Court, or if state lawmakers and the next governor approve a new civil unions bill. And closer to home, Sonoma County has agreed to a $653,000 settlement with Clay Green, the 78-year-old man who was forced from his 88-year-old partner in 2008. While Green and his late partner, Harold Skull, never married or registered as domestic partners, the two included one another in their wills and fulfilled the necessary steps to make medical decisions for each other. The lawsuit accused the county of raiding the couple's home and selling their belongings. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that $600,000 of the settlement would come from the county, the rest will come from Green's nursing home. The settlement also sets new regulations forbidding the public guardian's office from forcing people to move. And in Lake County, there will be a Pride Dance Saturday, August 7th, starting at 9 p.m. at the Elks Lodge on Lakeshore Boulevard in Lakeport. For more information, check that out online at SonomaBoysNightOut.com. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio.
If you just joined us, you are listening to Living Proof on Outbeat Radio with Diane and Sheridan, and I'm Sheridan. And we have two very special guests with us tonight, Ellen Miramont-Silver and Robin Bramhall. And we're here to get to know them a little bit. They have been around in the community for a very long time, and we don't really know them as people. We know them as a production company. So tonight is a very special night.
That it is. That it will be. And I'm looking forward to it.
We
welcome
are too.
Welcome, Robin and Ellen.
Thank you.
So we're going to go right into it.
We don't want to waste any time.
No time. Okay. But this hour is going to go by real fast. No, just teasing. But it's so nice to see you both here on this environment, you know?
Thanks. We feel at home here.
Yeah.
And we're very honored that you asked us, really. A lot of people said, really? Why'd they ask you?
What?
Maybe it was family members. Oh. They just didn't quite get it. Like, why are they asking you?
No. You guys are popular people in the county, and we want to know about your lives as people. So let's start. Let's tell everybody out there who's listening. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
We want to know about you as a couple. So, and this is what Living Proof is all about, you know. So tell us how you met each other.
Well, that's a fun story. Okay. I'll start. We both went to the Berkeley Women's Fitness Center. This was 1990. I guess you'd been there for a while, and I had too, but we had never met. And in those days, some of your listeners will remember, a lot of us were doing country western dancing at the Rawhide, and it was really, really popular.
In San Francisco.
And that morning, both of us were fully dressed and ready to go to work. And I was putting on, it's so odd to think of it now, but I was putting on collar tips on my shirt. Because that night, was that a Thursday night?
Yeah.
Silver collar tips. And I was dressed like I was going country western dancing, which
I was
doing that
night. A little bolo tie on, the whole bit.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a femme way of doing a bolo tie.
Like kind of a frilly shirt with a bolo tie. Yeah.
And so I was talking to my straight friend, Wendy, on one side of the lockers, and Robin was on the other side. And Wendy, being quite unfamiliar with all of this, said, well, where do you get those collar tips? Or what are those, and where do you get them? I said, well, like at a country western store. And then Robin piped up.
And I said, or at a leather shop. Because that's where I had just seen them with a friend. I was visiting New York, and we were on Christopher Street. And I stayed upstairs where the collar tips and other things were in the jewelry case while she went downstairs to the other things. So I happened to know that.
Things.
I don't know why I was drawn to say that, but I did. And then I was sorry I said it, because then Ellen said,
oh, well, what's your name? And at which point, Robin clammed up and would not tell me her name.
Because I'm basically shy.
She's basically shy, but I thought she was basically mysterious. So she wouldn't. And I, of course, kind of hounded her for a couple minutes and then gave up. And
But then that night, I arranged for a couple friends to meet me. I said, we got to go to the Rawhide tonight. There's a gal there I need to have you see and check out for me and with me. So I laid in wait. I got there early and laid in wait for Ellen. And when she got there, I said, oh, aren't you from the Y?
And I said, oh, I actually, as I remembered, I walked in. I went, I know you.
Oh, that's right. Well, somebody said something like that. Yeah.
You guys didn't waste any time, did you?
But it was funny because I was really just playing. And I don't know what you were doing. But but you would also said to your friend, Lorraine, oh, I have someone I want to be friends with. And
I knew little friend is probably how I put it. And friend. I mean that for, you know, anybody I want to meet. But so, and then we found out Ellen was a follower. I was a leader.
So that was good because I'm not tall enough to see over her shoulder as a country western dancer, so the leading wasn't going to work. So that was a good sign. And then a few nights later, this was December, like, I don't know, 21st or something. So our first real date was January 1st, New Year's Eve. And that kind of started, and then the rest is history. The U-Haul followed. And
how long after did the U-Haul?
I think we made ourselves wait like 9 months.
Yeah, it was 9 or 10 months.
Yeah.
But it was really great. Robin lived in Piedmont, and I lived near Lake Merritt, so we were about 3 minutes apart, which was very convenient. And then, of course, there was the whole thing at the Y. So we were always seeing each other at the Y at 7 in the morning.
So, Robin, you say you made yourselves wait?
To move in.
Yeah, you know, because... Right, because in, prior relationships, and lesbians are sort of famous for moving in too early together. We made ourselves, keep dating and, just know that we really wanted to. So I think it happened. Ellen traveled. She had a job where she traveled quite a bit. It was a sales job. So one time she had been away on a trip and she came back and I said, I don't want to not live with you anymore. I want to live with you.
So she moved into the house that I had bought with these two gay men friends. Mm. They didn't live there, so I was like, it was my way into the housing market. I owned a corner of the house, and Robin moved in, and that was great. And then I think just a little over a year later, we moved here.
93, we moved here. Yeah,
yeah.
What brought you here to Sonoma County?
Well, I knew that I had this idea that I wanted to retire here. I had a really good friend in Sebastopol, my oldest friend, actually, Laura Goldenberg, if she's listening. She could be.
Hi, Laura.
And Robin was open to it. I don't think you had had it in your mind.
Yeah, I like that idea. Ellen's very forward-looking, kind of visionary in that way. And so, we were looking at houses in Berkeley and Oakland, and we weren't too thrilled with what we could afford at that time. So Ellen said, well, let's think about, Sonoma County, because if we're thinking we'd like to retire up there, maybe we should start and build community now, so we don't have to, when we're old, go build community.
Old like 60, like I am now. I didn't want to wake up at this age and not have any friends where I moved to.
Yeah.
So we got here, and I think we started looking around, and a month later, we placed an offer on a house in outside of Grayton, and we've been there ever since. So it's 17 years since we moved here.
Wow. So how did you know you two were the ones for each other? How did you know?
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Well,
after all those others who were the ones us, right?
Right.
But this is the longest you've been.
This is
the longest.
Yeah.
We're not old enough to have been this long with anybody else.
We have very different histories in that regard. So I'm of the type that everyone that I fall in love with is the one for the rest of my life, but that person rarely thinks the same thing about me, or at least eventually she never does. So I've been left by women that I thought I was going to be with for the rest of my life. And so with Ellen, I had been in therapy. And, what am I doing wrong? Who am I? I'm picking the wrong kind of women. So Ellen was definitely different, and that kind of struck me.
And all her friends went, you're dating her?
Yeah. They were sort of confused.
There was some question about whether this was actually going to work.
You could explain different.
Right. We knew what different went. So my friends were a little confused, but I just felt drawn to her. And
admit that they were leery, not just confused. There was some judgments going on
there.
They
were a little, yeah. So, but it was just I just thought there's some, and it wasn't just like animal attraction, that kind. I mean, that was cool too, but it was just not a challenge. I don't know, just something drew me and still does. I mean, it's just
even when I drive her crazy, she reminds herself that something draws her to me.
Yeah, it's just, we connect on some levels that just cannot be denied, I suppose.
But these friends of ours, mutual people that we knew, or your friends that I knew, I think, I'm Jewish. I have a lot of qualities that were very, very different from her previous partners. One was really quiet. They're just very, very different kinds of people. Yeah. And so I think they thought, really? Do you know what you're getting into? And in fact, our first years were full of struggle.
Because really?
We're really, really, really different.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, and we had to learn to,
Wow, I want to talk a little bit about that.
I'll bet you do.
It makes me, think, whenever Diana and I meet couples, it's always been, they've always had their love at first sight kind of thing, and goo goo ahs, and they never fight kind of thing. You know?
Really? Who?
And
we Diana, don't know that.
Well, Diana and I like fought
that.
Our first.
I've had that kind.
We fought our first 7 years, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, it was a struggle until we kind of decided that we kind of fell into what felt natural, but it took a long time. And so, for you guys. Sorry, for you to...
We'll tell you that story later. Oh, yeah. If you really want the truth.
Oh, yeah, we do.
For you to come and say it was your first years were full of struggle, I'd like to know a little bit about that, if you could share.
Well, so one of the things that appealed to me about Ellen was that she had done a lot of personal work. She had a lot of knowledge and language about sort of feelings. I mean, I could probably name two feelings when we met, and now I can name like 7 or 8, you know.
And I think on a regular basis.
Ellen knows like 412. Oh, so,
whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, she seemed so, like, together and equipped with tools and all that kind of stuff. And she was in 12-step. Is that okay to say? Oops.
Well, oh, it's not okay, but of course it is. Yeah, I'm very open about it. Yeah. That's for me to say.
But
I've been in 12-step
but I was
for 22 years now at this point, as well as therapy since 1976. So I'm not currently in therapy, but I had done therapy on and off for many years. So I had a different kind of vocabulary and interest in that kind of thing.
And I think the fact that I'd been in therapy for a couple of years was made that okay, because probably before that I would have been afraid to death of somebody who is that in touch and that into process.
But I'm not that evolved. See, the problem is I had all that stuff, but I'm
really
very difficult. I'm very difficult to as a partner. And I mean, I know this. And one day it suddenly dawned on me that, I mean, after all, one of our many struggles. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to be in an easy relationship because I will always be in it. So if I'm in the relationship, it's going to be hard because that's what I'm like. And it doesn't mean I can't grow and change. And Robin is not, you know, I would say not totally easy either.
No,
and
nobody's so, totally easy.
So I think we've had a lot of work to do. And so within the first 6 months of our relationship, we were in therapy. And we had a fabulous therapist. And I wish I could remember her name now.
In Berkeley, she was
She was Jewish. M. Her first name starts with M. Anyway, she was wonderful. And she didn't let either of us squirm out of anything. She was very confronting in a very gentle and persistent way. And really brought... And Rob, why don't you tell the thing about crying?
Oh, yeah. So one of the things that I struggled with is Ellen's family at that time. Her sister had cancer when we met and eventually died. And there was... So Ellen was very emotive. And she cried on occasion, and I'm not used to that. And so I think one of the things I probably expressed was, you know, what if she just never stops crying? That was one of my worries.
Well, yeah, I think the therapist said,
what is your fear? I said, I'm afraid she'll never stop crying, or she'll cry so much that I won't know what to do. I can't handle it. And so this very brilliant woman said something very simple. She said, well, what would be a length of time that you think is okay for Ellen to cry?
That you can handle.
Yeah, I said, well, like 5 minutes. Okay, Ellen, do you think you could, like, after you're done crying for 5 minutes, if you're crying longer than that, you could go away someplace else and cry? And Ellen said, sure.
Yeah. And in fact, in the 18 years since then, I don't think I've ever cried longer than 5 minutes.
No, she hasn't.
But it gave us such safety, that structure. It gave Robin safety, and it gave me permission to be who I am, which is someone who cries when she's sad.
Mm-hmm. And so that tool, that little construct, has served us in many ways, like... traveling with Ellen was going to drive me crazy because she could actually take like 5 hours to pack to get out of the house because she packs everything she has, then she starts to unpack what she won't need. That's kind of her process for packing.
What?
So that was bad enough getting out of the house. Then, this is the fun part, is you get to your destination, like you're going from hotel to hotel or whatever, she'll take that long to pack from the hotel. Like, you can't take the linens from the hotel. She knows that, like, just to pack her shit
what
that she
brought
are
with there?
Her. Yeah, there's no decisions. She can still take like 2.5 hours to pack. So I said, okay, I can only take like 20 minutes of that. I could go take a walk while she finishes packing. I can go, you know, have dinner, lunch, and breakfast in that time.
Robin is exaggerating.
A little bit. But anyway.
Which she learned from me because I'm a huge exaggerator.
But that's just such a cool tool. Like, you know, you don't have to stay with that. If it does not work for you, so that's cool.
And actually, just to mention one more thing about therapy, we've been in therapy a couple times with Frances Fuchs, and she was really, really helpful to us.
The local.
I know a lot of your people know her. And when I got to Frances, she had her partner had died, and I didn't know her. I didn't know either of them at the time, but I thought, I know this person understands grief. And I went to her when my sister had been sick for like 5 years or 6 years, and eventually, as Robin said, she died. And Frances was so great with all that. She gave us tools that we still use. And very recently, we were, you know, every couple of years we think like, I don't really like you. What should we do? You know? And so we were in one of those periods where we weren't getting along very well. And Robin said, we need to do something different. And I said, how about if we do something the same, but we haven't been practicing? Let's pull out some of our tools that Frances taught us. And let's once a week check in and have our own little mini therapy session. And we've been doing that, and it really has helped a lot. And I don't know why we didn't think of that before.
Give an example.
So thank you, Frances.
Yeah. Well, we have these little cards that she gave us, basically how to communicate. And one person is the
initiator,
and the other person is kind of
the listener, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, the listener. Yeah. And so we'll pick a topic. And one of us does one of these roles and like, oh, you know, it's been bothering me that X has been happening. And then the other person's the questioner. And then when we're all done, we read Thich Nhat Hanh, who is the fabulous Buddhist monk. And we read a couple pages from him. And it has helped us so much. Mm. And that's just the last few months. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's great. Because I think it's really interesting for me to hear about how you resolve your conflicts. You know, because I think a lot of people are afraid of conflict. Mm-hmm. And if they have a little bit of a conflict, they run.
And it's scary. We're scared. Yeah. It's not like it's easy for us at all. But we realize that to get to the other side, we have to do this work. Well, and I've seen couples that don't do it and some that do. And I don't think you can make it long term unless you're going to either A, stifle all those feelings that you don't want to express, or you get in there and you deal with it.
Well, it seems like we were convinced early on that both of us were committed to the relationship, and that feels like totally different. I mean, I guess I should have known before that it wasn't like that with other partners, but and maybe it's because we were we were more mature when we got. I was 34 and Ellen was 40 when we got together, so you two have been together since you were younger, so that's it was probably different for you. But I felt like, you know, okay, I'm going into this, and I haven't felt ever like, oh, she's going to leave me over this, or I'm going to leave her over this. And either way,
one thing was different for me. I felt in fact, in my early relationships, all my relationships, or most of them up until you, I did feel like I'm committed to this person. I'm absolutely committed. And then I cheated. And it was BS. You know, I was in my very bad behaviors, very dysfunctional. And finally, I think I had had my nose rubbed in it enough times in my life that I got myself active in the 12-step thing. And it really saved me. I don't think Robin could have stood me had I not been doing it, even though I was kind of irritating about the 12-step thing when we met.
Still, it's worth it.
It really, and sometimes she's been known to say, don't you need to go to a meeting? and it's not because she's a codependent. It's because I probably need to go. But it's, you know, whatever tools you need. I mean, my nephew's going through all kinds of crap in his life, and I keep thinking, I have so many tools that he doesn't have, and he doesn't want to be open to this or whatever. When I was younger, I didn't either. But finally, I thought, I don't want to live like this. I really don't. And eventually, I just, every day, I was like, thank God I have the life I had. It could have been so different. And it was so different.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm just listening here, sitting with you, and I am so appreciative to hear your honesty. I mean, like Cher said earlier about when we meet couples. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's all about. I mean, all the couples out there listening get to hear real stories about relationships and how to keep them moving forward.
Well, thank you for giving us the forum.
Yeah. And I know, you know, a lot of you out there are going through this stuff and experience this stuff. And I like it when we talk about this with other couples, because otherwise we think we're the only ones doing it. And we learn from each other. We learn from other couples. And we have friends. We have several friends who are therapists. And sometimes they just talk about these things more, as y'all do. So
I love having therapists as friends. It's very helpful because they can't help but bring their skills to the relationship with me. Yeah. Yeah. And all of our friends, I think, I don't know any couples who don't have fairly significant struggles at different times.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We have especially the kind of people we like are a little nutty, so we all have a lot of stuff. And I think it's just essential. Well, Robin talked about commitment, and I think by the time we met, that's when I said, you know, I could do this over and over again. How many times? Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'll always be in the relationship. It's never going to be easy. I'm always going to have to accept who I am. I'm always going to have to accept who the other person is, which is very hard for me. And, you know, and it was really important to me not just to go off and be like, you know, 70 years old all by myself. I'm not a person that does well like that. So I had to do the work.
So what about, I'm curious about how family plays a part in your relationship or your religion, because you talked about being different as, you know.
Right, and I'm Jewish and Robin is what?
Like, I grew up a Methodist. A sort of a non-believing Methodist, which I thought all Methodists were at the time, because that's how our church was. But no, I was big into the sort of fellowship aspect of my church upbringing and activities. So I was, you know, president of the youth group, and I, you know, helped put together services, and I memorized all the, I knew all the songs. I loved the music. And but so when Ellen and I were getting ready, we hadn't gone to any sort of services when we had, when we were together, except at high holidays, the Jewish high holidays. Ellen would go on occasionally. I would go with you, maybe.
You go to like one thing.
Yeah. The happier ones, like go to the sad ones where they read all the names of people who had died, because that's too sad. But so then when we got ready to, we wanted to join a congregation. We thought we did. And I just feel like, I think I learned this over the years, like at Christian holiday times, which in the United States is just called holidays.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I felt like I'm represented by most of the world out there for my background, and I get my Christmas needs met just by going to Macy's. So I said I was open then to joining a synagogue with Ellen if she could find one that she wanted to join, and finally she did. So we joined a synagogue together, and so that was the religion part.
So the religion thing. I think being Jewish, you know, is a very strong culture, and so that's been a lot. And let's just bring in the family thing here. We have a great story.
So when we first got together, and I was, you know, I talked to my mom once a week usually. So I said, well, I'm you know, seeing this woman, Ellen. Well,
before you go there, you have to say
what your name
Rick was married to.
Oh, okay, right. So anyway, I have to say that Ellen's name at that time was Ellen Elias. And so my brother had married a Jewish woman, maybe 6 or 7 years before that or whatever. And her name was Rita.
And nobody in the family liked Rita.
You know, she was a little much for our family. So, a little much. So my mother says, oh, Ellen Elias, is she Jewish? My mom's like famous for picking last names and knowing who would ever guess. I didn't know Elias was Jewish, but I said, yes, she is. She says, well, how Jewish is she? And I didn't even want to go there with her. I said, Mom, I think you'll like her. And that was, that sort of shut her down. That was the end of that. And you know what? My mom loves Ellen, and she loves her for some of the same reasons I do, in that she, my mom feels comfortable talking to Ellen about feelings and about, you know, her struggles with my dad and her struggles with the rest of my family. And she just really trusts Ellen to be there for her. And they have fun when my dad and I will, you know, get together and I golf with my dad, because I took up golf so I could golf with my dad. And then Ellen and my mom go shopping.
And we have a great time.
Yeah.
We do.
Or they go to lunch or whatever. Yeah.
One thing about your mom, she really doesn't talk about feelings with anybody but
me. Right.
I don't think she has anyone else that she does that with, because I'm interested and I ask her and we sit there and it's just the two of us and it'll be nice. But yeah, if there's other people around her, she doesn't tell your sister stuff like that for sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I
does she?
No, I don't think so. No,
I kind of had that same relationship with Diana's mother. Diana's mother, back when before she died, and we had this very special bond where she would tell me that she loved me, and I would tell her that I loved her, but she wouldn't tell her own children that.
Yeah.
So Diana missed out on that, but there was something about the freedom that I brought to her that she could express herself that her own kids felt like they couldn't bring. So that's interesting.
It was beautiful to watch, though. I was happy for my mom to have that, to be able to have that with Cher. Oh,
It is special. Well, the story, I guess, that means the most to me around Robin, my mother had her struggles around my coming out, but so I was, by the time I met Robin, I had been out for 8 years, and I had a couple of relationships in that interim. And while my sister was sick, my mother also, both my mother and father died during that period, and then my sister died. So it was a very difficult period. My father had died. My father died, and then my mother got sick. And we were on our way to the hospital, which turned out to be the final ride to the hospital.
We had gone together. Ellen and I had gone back to Chicago.
Right. And we spent a weekend, a really difficult weekend, trying to take care of my mother. And Robin was 100% there for her. And it's not like my mother hadn't been liking Robin or interested, but we got in the ambulance or something, whatever
she was. Yeah, when she was getting into the ambulance.
And were you in there too with me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, and my mother looked at me and she said something like, I really love Robin and I can never, no, I think she said, I can never thank her enough for what she's done. And so I knew when she died that she had come 100% around and especially felt that I was safe in the arms of someone who loved me and it, you know, she could die in peace as far as that went. So that was very important because like all families, we had a path to take and the early part was not real fun.
Right, right.
You know, it was don't tell your mother it'll kill her kind of stuff.
Right.
In fact, it didn't kill her, but those damn cigarettes, that's what really did it. But me being a lesbian really wasn't it. So
we're going to have to take a music break, but okay. This has been a fabulous first half of our interview. Wow. We're going to take a little break with some Gwen Avery singing Sugar Mama.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. You're listening to KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa.
Her Sugar Mama CD singing Sugar Mama. It's a great song.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Living Proof. We have Ellen and Robin in the studio. This is Diane and Sheridan hosting.
That's right.
We're talking about family.
Yeah.
So, Ellen, you want to say more about your family?
I did. So I've already mentioned, of course, my sister passing away, and she had two kids. And those two kids are kind of like our kids. I mean, we're really close to them. They're in their 30s, and they had a tough life, and they've had a lot to go through. And both Robin and I, you know, are really involved in their life. And then my niece has a five-year-old, so we're really involved in her life. And that my nephew, when he came to our commitment ceremony, our big commitment ceremony. We've had three ceremonies so far, and counting, but that one was the one we had like a party and people and presents and all that. And my nephew, who was about, I don't know, whatever age he was at the time, he said that's the relationship he wanted. He wanted a wedding like ours, and he wanted a marriage like ours. And here's a straight, you don't come straighter than my nephew. And he looked at that, and he could see that that was something special. And that was really a neat kind of affirmation for us about family.
That's nice.
Yeah. So, and then we're also very close to Robin's niece and nephew, and not quite as close, but I think it's been great because in her family there's been a little bit more, at least with some people, a little bit more prejudice against the gay thing. And, you know, I think it's...
But sort of unspoken. So a lot of it's just like, well, you know, oh, I just couldn't make it. You know, my brother-in-law says, I just couldn't make it. You know, our lives are busy and the kids couldn't
come. To the wedding.
The wedding. So just my sister came from her family.
But then last year when I saw him at Christmas and I said, I haven't totally let go that you didn't let the kids come for the wedding and you didn't come. Oh, I totally wanted to. I don't know why I didn't. He was totally in denial. It's like, Edward, you said you didn't approve of same-sex marriage. You told me that. Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah. So, you know, people are still working it out.
But that's neat that you could go there and say, you know, I haven't quite let go of the fact that you didn't let the kids come to the wedding.
Because
I tend to hold stuff in and not say it.
So does my family.
And I think that's really good that you could just come out and say it. And I want to be like you.
Oh, yeah. When you grow up, huh? Yeah. Well, when you get to be 60, Sheridan, maybe you can.
Diana's always telling me, though, I want to be like Diana, too.
In some ways. But sometimes it can backfire. But it can be a chance for you to sort of make some healing happen on both sides. But
But it's good that actually he's coming around. I mean, I'd rather him think that he did approve and still wants to approve than something else. So we can get through that, what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. So did you marry? You married, right? 2008?
We had a commitment. So the first time we got married was at a Pride celebration, who knows when.
At the JC.
At the JC, like in 95, maybe.
All the couples.
Yes. All the couples go up front. And, you know, so I thought, well, this will be fun. We signed up and ran up. And it's like a gang wedding thing. It was just a kind of a practice thing. Like, well, you'll never get to get married, but here, let's just pretend. So we, you know, had our shorts and T-shirts on, and we signed up and went up. And you know, you kiss in public, and we had done that a few times. But the part that really got me was walking through the crowd under the oaks there, and they were clapping for us, and they really looked happy for us, the little couples walking down. I don't know if you did that before, but and I thought, wow, this is what it feels like. This is why people have weddings. And I didn't know that. And so afterwards, we were talking. I said, you know, I think I want us to have a wedding. I want to feel this together with people we love. I mean, this is nice. These are strangers who are throwing love at us, and I want to do it with people I love.
And I had been married to a man and had been through all of that. It was a long time ago, but so it wasn't my first instinct to do it. But I'm glad we did. It was a really nice ceremony, and Francis Fuchs was our officiant.
When did you do it?
That was in 98. Mm-hmm.
And then when it became legal, in
2008, we picked the same date, July 11th. And got married again. Francis Fuchs officiated at our synagogue because the rabbi was out of town.
Yeah, we had seven people at that one. The first one we had like 65. So that was just a really little one, really nice and special and legal.
Two of the kids who had been at the first wedding in 98 were there as older children that they hadn't remembered at the first one. So they were there. It was really neat. Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys didn't do the Gavin Newsom one?
No,
we didn't.
Tried.
We were on the list. We were on the list, and then it got struck down.
Wow.
So that's what we sort of quick did this one in Sonoma County. Okay. Yeah. So we're still officially married in the eyes of the state of California.
And
doesn't
domestic
get as much,
partners
but,
as well.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And what'd you say, business partners?
Domestic partners.
Oh, okay. We are business partners, but we're domestic partners.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about the commitment, and then we want to get to those coming out stories.
Okay, commitment, Robin.
You have a story.
You know, let's get on to the coming out stories. That's fine.
Okay.
Do we have time? I don't know.
Yeah, we have time. Yeah.
Well, I just thought this was an interesting story
because commitment is important.
Commitment is important. Let's talk commitment, you people out there. So I I was in the study one day. I work out of my home, and I was in the office, and I found a receipt on the desk that was from Copperfields. And the item purchased by Ellen was the thing that it said for the title was When You Lie, dot, dot, dot. And I Oops. Thought, oh, wow. She bought a book about when you lie. Did she lie about something? Did I lie about something?
Is she wow. afraid I'm
Is
lying
Is she afraid
about
I'm lying about something? You know, all these things. I thought, well, you know, we'll have to talk about that.
And how worried were you?
And I wasn't very worried. And I thought, wow, that's weird that I'm not more worried, because twice in my past, I like found pieces of paper that like convinced me that I was being left. So this time I like noticed, like, I'm not worried. I just want to find out what this is about. And I know we'll be okay, but we have something to talk about. And then I got more curious, and I went online, and I just sort of went into Amazon or something and typed in When You Lie. And I realized that the rest of that title is When You Lie About Your Age, The Terrorists Win, which is a book of comedy writing.
Carol Leifer, former writer for Seinfeld, and she's an out lesbian, and we bought her book at Synagogue one night.
So it was really, you know, so I ended the whole controversy, but it was, I just really was kind of impressed with our relationship, that at how sort of calm I was about the whole thing.
And that's so great that you didn't lose it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
our imaginations play so many mm-hmm. games with yeah. us. And mm-hmm. you went for the truth.
Yeah.
Even before Ellen got home, yeah. you went to go find out something to like yeah. ease your mind. Even though you say you were okay, you were curious.
I was curious, yeah. But that's kind of the power of trust. And I think this works in business. You know, if you're in a group of people, whether it's a community group or a nonprofit or the place you work, you know, if you can have that level of trust mm-hmm. of people, you know, I heard somebody say something that really seemed hurtful, but I know they really want what's best for me or the group or whatever, so I'm going to explore this some more to find out where that good part is. Mm. That is very helpful.
That's Robin being her human resources consultant.
But you know, that's where the personal true, can really inform the professional mm. sometimes, so that's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, the Carol Leifer book's pretty cute.
Yeah. Because she's a newly born lesbian, too. So she was, yeah.
Yeah, like maybe 10 years. Super new, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was the commitment story. Okay. So now you want the coming out story.
Yes, please.
Robin, why don't you start? Okay. Well, like I said, I was married to a man, and I didn't. So we split up in 1976 when I was 26 years old, and I was still running around being kind of miserable and obsessive.
Well, how long were you married?
We were together for 10 years. We were married for 6. I met him when I was 16 years old. So it was kind of, you know, it was. You know, I was very, very, very young. And I moved to New York to dance, and I lived there, and I was very lonely and kind of just, I had a hard time. I had a really hard time and made a lot of bad choices, really bad choices. And that kept going even after I came out. So I realized that the issue wasn't really male or female for me. The issue was I needed to just get some help in my life. But I think I had this boyfriend, very nice guy, and I was really nuts about him, but I had been having these feelings built for women, and I just didn't know what to do. I had moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where there were a lot of lesbians, and I had already fallen in love with my best friend, and she was killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. So then I moved to Madison, and there were all these lesbians around. I lived in a household with 5 other people, one of whom used to be a lesbian in quotes. I'll say it was when, you know, she was on panels and things, but actually never ended up having a relationship of any sort with a woman. But, you know, it was those days, and she knew all these lesbians, and they were nothing like me. Absolutely nothing. I'm really short. They were all really big women who smoked lots of cigarettes, drank lots of liquor. And it was just a whole other thing that was like, I thought, I don't think I can be a lesbian. You know? But
that's what it looked like. Huh?
And I wasn't attracted to them, and they clearly weren't attracted to me. Like, they had no interest in me whatsoever. So it was, and it was Wisconsin, too. So being Jewish was not really groovy there. So finally, I went to a women's music festival and went to Michigan. And I met someone there who just made my like head pop off. But she was just a total tease and not really interested in me other than to drive me insane. And she lived a few blocks from me, it turned out. You know, I went to Michigan, there were 7,000 women there, and she lives 2 blocks from me. So the whole...
In Wisconsin.
Oh. In Madison. And for about 9 months there, I just drove myself insane. And finally, one day, she decided to give me the pleasure of her company, which was just, it was like the stars aligned. The year, the month I came out, the stars aligned. Everybody I looked at was there for me. And that's how I came out. I had this boyfriend, but I was exploding inside. And I thought, I have to have a woman. I just have to. I didn't know. I was like a 14-year-old. You know, it was crazy. And then that was it. Then it was the end of him. And he didn't want me anyway. He really liked lesbians. But, you know, his girlfriend before me was a lesbian.
There are men like that.
I think he's happily married now with, you know, a straight woman, which is great. And I just, that was it. That was my coming out story, basically. And it took a while to come out to my family and all that. But I exploded. Oh, I forgot to say I had to join a softball team in order to actually meet my first girlfriend. It worked.
Softball was where it was all at. But on the other hand, I think I was born a lesbian. I'm one of those. Because I remember having little girlfriends. What, you too?
Right on.
Yeah. I mean, I've had girlfriends. I mean, I fell in love with, you know, my neighbor when I was 5, you know, and just always had girlfriends. So, and my mom always went, don't you want to have a circle of friends, honey? It's really better to have a circle of friends, you know, have a circle of friends. I don't know. Okay, well, I'd like to have them one at a time. How's that? So by the time, you know, I was in high school and your best friend, you could do other things with, like spend the night, you know. And that became more than friends, and there you have it. And that was, I mean, really right around, you know, women's music was really all the rage, and all, you know, Mae Christian concerts and Holly Near concerts were, you know, that just felt so home to me. And it was just, oh, I would just cry and just sing and sway. And that was just the time to come out, man. I mean, that was just the best. So,
and what years were you in college?
Well, so I graduated high school in 1974. So by that time, so in 1973, probably was my first real relationship with one of my former, or with my best friend, who was then in college, because she was a year older. So 1974 on, you know, those were, you know, big years. And I went to school in L.A. and, you know, saw Mae Christian, you know, at a tiny place, you know, maybe two times the size of this place. You know, in
McCabe's small studio. If you've never been to KRC, yeah. Oh, it's a really small room.
Oh, so maybe there were 100 people at this concert in McCabe's guitar shop in West LA. Yeah, so there you have it. So the music was a big part of it, and we share love of Mae Christian. And
yes, we do.
Yeah,
yes,
we do. Mm-hmm. We went on an Olivia Cruise with Meg on it.
Oh,
yeah, that was
when
so
we
cool.
saw that she was going to be on it, and there was going to be all kinds of women's comedy.
Yeah,
as bringing full circle to We Mean It. That was the cruise. It's like, okay, this is the time to go on a cruise. So we did.
A cruise we could write off and
oh yeah,
see Meg and hear comics.
Well,
we
let's
would
talk
love,
about
want
how
to
We
yeah.
Mean It.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Tell us about how We Mean It came to be.
When I first came out, even I would say in the very early days of coming out, I had a very, very close friend who lived in San Francisco, male, and I used to come out and visit him, and we would go to queer comedy stuff at Valencia Rose, and I loved it. I loved it. And as a matter of fact, my first girlfriend and I produced Leah Delaria in Madison, who was not well-known at all. She was kind of well-known in San Francisco, but she wasn't known. You know, now she does Broadway and all this kind of stuff. So when Rob and I got together, we really shared a love of gay and lesbian comedy. And when we moved up here, we would go to the Chrysalis events. And a lot of listeners will remember Chrysalis had wonderful women's comedy. But it wasn't specifically lesbian. So sometimes it was a lesbian thing and sometimes it wasn't. And so we thought, you know, we could put on a show here. And so we contacted the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts, which was the Luther Burbank Center.
And we booked the smallest hall, like 300 people. Mm.
And we had our first show, which was 1995, Tom Amiano, Doug Holsklaw, Lisa Godaldig, and Susie Berger. And people were hanging off the rafters. We got nasty notes. Why didn't you get a bigger hall? You should have known. We didn't know. Mm-hmm. We had no idea. So we got that hall. The next year we did the next show in the slightly bigger hall, and the folks at the Luther Burbank Center came to us and said, well, how would you like to co-produce this show?
Wow.
So we've been doing that ever since 96 that we made that agreement. So
and the family comes back into play here when you talk about why is it called We Mean It Productions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to reveal to the public something little known. So it sounds, and a lot of people come up to us and they think, oh yeah, that's very assertive and feisty and strong women, we mean it. But in fact, it has to do with my mother. She was visiting us, and my mother was a challenging person, let's say. And she was staying with us, and she wanted me to take care of her travel arrangements going home for a ride to the airport, but I kept stalling. And I don't know, I was being a brat, probably. And she was annoying me already from the moment she got there.
Okay. So one, it was a Sunday morning, like 2 days before Ellen had to leave, or her mother had to leave. So Ellen went off to a meeting and left me alone with mother. So Betty was making phone calls, trying to find a shuttle or something to the airport. And she was just having bad luck. You know, people didn't speak English well enough for her and all kinds of things. So Ellen gets home and she still didn't have any plans. And Ellen kind of said, well, I'll be with you in a minute. I'm going to go take a shower. And Betty was even more upset.
And I said, well, can't you wait an hour? No, I can't. These people are all idiots and nobody's going to help. And she was really out of control.
So Ellen did go in and take a shower. And so I was, you know, both perturbed with Betty, and I really sort of wanted to calm her down a bit. And I said, you know, perhaps with a little sarcasm or whatever in my voice, I said, Betty, you didn't get to be, you know, 72 years old by being helpless.
Oh, by the way, she was a travel agent.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to tell you that. She actually was a she knows how to do these things. So she didn't take to that very well. She said, well, to hell with you both, and I mean it.
Oh. So when we started,
that was one of my favorite sayings.
So now you know.
So when we were really upset with each other, you know, well, to hell you're wrong, and I mean it.
Yeah.
And to hell with you. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a little family joke.
Yeah, it is a family
and now
joke.
Now it's a Sonoma County joke.
It's like all art. You can interpret it any way you like.
Yeah. Huh. We mean it.
So I'm curious when she said, to heck with you and to heck with and I mean it. What at that moment, what happened?
Oh, I was devastated. So thank you for asking. Yeah. I thought, well, she's never going to talk to me again. I just blew this whole thing for Ellen, who was in the shower, you know. And she's going to come out and find out that her mother hates me and her. And I did it with my little snotty comment. But, you know, she was fine. It was like she had said, you know, I'll have maple syrup on my pancakes. You know,
well, my mother had a little anger management problem due to a little bit of, you know, a hard childhood of her own. And so her way of dealing with things was very codependent and very much like, I don't know. She would I'm not going, slam the door, and that was it. And all these things happen frequently, a couple times a year at least, and more maybe. And so this was not atypical for her. It wasn't pleasant, and I'm sorry for Robin that you had to go through that. But
I was wondering about that. Did you have that experience in your family? But no, huh?
No. They didn't do that. Yeah, no, a drama queen, that term would go real well in my household. So that's where that all happened. But, you know, everybody forgave everyone.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that was kind of brave of you.
It was naughty of her.
I was getting pretty shy, and I knew she had the. I knew she had it, you know. Yeah. And sometimes I just need to be told, you know, Robin, you can do this, you know. Yeah. And so I know sometimes it can work, but it didn't work for her. But
well, she wanted to be taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wasn't taking care of her, which wasn't nice of me. And I have said, I'm sorry, Mom, looking to the sky several times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's hard when you're a kid. I was still acting like a 2-year-old, but she was also still acting like a 2-year-old. And so then Robin jumped in with her 3-year-old.
I was a mature one in that story, yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing with us.
It was fun being here.
Yeah, we've come to that time. But
how
we want,
is that possible?
I know. Yeah. It just went by really fast, but we really want to ask you to, I know there's a lot of couples out of individual people, single people who are listening. So as a couple, and we really respect what you've brought here today,
Thank you.
Just your openness. Mm-hmm. So if you can give some advice to people who may be struggling and, you know, and making a commitment to stay here and struggle in it, you know, what advice can you offer?
I think all the personal work that I've done, whether it's, you know, Buddhist meditation or 12-step or therapy or reading or writing, whatever your path is, I mean, everyone has a million choices available. I think you need to do that and be with that, because otherwise you're not going to find out your own truth. And it's very hard to be in a relationship with someone if you're really not present for yourself at all.
So finding something that you're passionate about and spending time with yourself doing it. Is what you're saying.
But I'm talking about an internal kind of spiritual quest or psychological quest, not just something that you enjoy. I like being in the garden, but it doesn't necessarily bring me to understanding and then willingness to change behaviors, because that's so hard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gee, that's a tough question. But I feel like I don't really have advice for most people, but I think what I go back to, and the reason I'm still in this relationship, I think, is that I liked the thing that works for me is to remember what about Ellen? What about this relationship is what I cherish, and what would I not give up? And I can, if I can go there when I'm even the most perturbed with this relationship, and I can remember, you know, I love to laugh with her. This is the woman I want to spend the rest of my life laughing with. Despite how crazy she's making me right now, then I get there. I get through it.
But I also don't think it's right for everyone. You know, not everyone needs to be in a long-term relationship. Not everyone will be happy there. I really think we're all so, so different as people. I know people who want to be together for the rest of their lives, and they will never live together. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, it just, yeah, that's why you have to find your own path. And the men I know are a whole other story.
Yeah.
You know, their relationships are sometimes very different than ours. But so I think we all have to find out who we are within the relationship, and then do our goals match. If my goals match hers, and talk about it. If they don't, it's going to be a huge struggle. And I think that's one thing that we've agreed on again and again, is that we have the same goals for what we want to do together. And that helps.
Yeah, I just listening to you, we have maybe a couple more minutes, so I just wanted to throw this in. But just listening to you makes me remember and kind of review in my mind about what Diana and I do when we get on each other's nerves. And I think for me, it's just having the freedom to be who I am in the relationship and not being who maybe she wants me to be every second of the day. You know, like I have outside interests of the relationship. And sometimes people, I'm not saying Diana's like this, but sometimes people want you there 100% of the time. Be there for me, kind of like, you know, let's eat together. Let's go to the movies together. Let's, whatever we do, let's make sure it's together. Let's have friends together. And I like to drum, and I like to play music, and I like to do art, and I'm starting to volunteer at a ranch now to help horses. And
she likes to do a lot.
Yeah.
And Diana likes to do other things like write and create and do a lot of soul searching and help other people find their path. And so it's still a work in progress, I'd say, but we're coming to an understanding that in order for me to be 100% present with Diana and be her wife, I have to have some needs fulfilled in myself. I can't give up who I am either.
And well, you can't do it. Oh.
Society doesn't always accept that. I mean, we really have this, you know, now your union, your souls are united and you never shall part. You know, geez, you know, sometimes it's healthy to part, people. You know? So it takes some space.
The other piece of it is that you can't, I don't know anybody who can get all their needs met from one other person. And so why try and put that pressure on that relationship? Hopefully you like the same things. I want to be with Robin more than she wants to be with me. But it's not totally unbalanced, and that's crazy unbalanced. But I can't get all my needs met through her. That would be insane, and she can't through me. So I think that's a pressure that people put on themselves that can make things very difficult.
Well, we're going to have to quit. And we don't want to quit.
Well, we'll just have to have dinner together. That's all there is to it. Definitely. And the rest of you come along.
Yes, there you go. Definitely. We want to thank everyone who is listening out there for joining us tonight. And we want to thank Ellen and Robin for being our very wonderful special
Thanks
guests.
Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
We want you to remember out there that, like Ellen and Robin, you too can be living proof that if you work hard on yourself and with each other, you can have a successful long-term relationship. Until then, until next month, this is us, and we want to say...
This is us. This is Diane Scher.
This
Living
is
Proof.
Scher.
Good night.
Into the window of my mind, reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and families, couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. And from PFLAG, the North Bay chapter of parents, family, and friends of lesbians, gays, transgender, and intersex persons. The Santa Rosa Support Group meets at 7:30 p.m. on the fourth Monday of the month at 312 Chin Street. Information about support group meetings in Napa, Marin, and Mendocino counties is available at 1-866-350-2462 or on the web at pflag-nb.org. Join us next week on Outbeat Radio for Outbeat Music, The Sunny Side with Sun Bell. You're listening to KRCB-FM. It's a little before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.